Hello, I'm Paul Moon, and I'm with Marie Sheehan, who's a composer, lyricist, arranger, performer, and academic. Welcome, Marie.
Kia ora, Paul.
Great. We'd like to talk a bit about, firstly, some of your earliest influences, both musically and lyrically. What were they?
Well, actually, I was brought up with a lot of pop music, to be honest, a lot of American pop music, a lot of disco, that kind of top 20 hits. I was influenced by, I suppose, the American commercial side of music. On the other side, culturally, I was influenced by my mum and her singing and the whānau getting together and playing guitar and singing waiata.
So that's a whole dimension that most other performers aren't exposed to.
No, I suppose, obviously, being Māori, I was absolutely exposed to that whole cultural waiata and the way that they sung together and the way that my family came together and all those sorts of things.
And you're in an area that really it's an art form that draws on a whole lot of disciplines, and you've got composition, performance, producing the lyrics, the production of the music. How do you go about developing your skills in all those areas?
Those areas, there's so much in each of those particular areas, so I'm going to expand on each of those. Yep. and talk about how it was for me. As far as composing music goes, my training has always been in piano, and I did classical piano when I was 8 years old, and I've always had music in my whānau as well, both on my mother's and my father's side, and that I think contributed to the fact that I enjoyed playing music and I was always had music around me. So in terms of composing, I started composing, I suppose, stories and lyrics when I was about 14 years old, and played the piano. And how it came about was more the fact that I felt that I had messages or stories that I wanted to write about or emote about how it was for me as a teenager, and I used music as a way of doing that. So it was a collaborative experience between music and playing the piano and writing lyrics.
Well, that's very interesting, because you've talked about almost a message that you're trying to get through, whereas I think most people, if they think about your career, would identify you very strongly from the musical side and say this is really your, dare I say, forte. That's the area that you specialise in. So it's really a combination of the two that you're talking about.
Absolutely. I mean, for me, I'm not, when I compose, I'm talking about, I suppose, the contemporary pop genre. I'm not talking about classical composition at this stage. And that goes in hand, there's always lyrics and a story and a message and a kaupapa to whatever it is that you're writing about. And music is the vehicle that I think enhances that story. Hey, apopo. Kawea mai, te wā omo. Hei kunei, hei apopo. Kawea mai, te wā omo. Hei whakapakari te katoa. Hei apopo. So in terms of how I developed that, for me, writing is something that has come naturally to me since I was very young, and I've just continued to write songs. I go to workshops. I've been to lots of different workshops, international workshops with songwriters, as well as domestic workshops with songwriters as well, to kind of get a gauge of how they write and what their creative process is in terms of composing. I think listening is a huge aspect to composing as well. Like, I listen, when I was really in the thick of composing music, I used to listen constantly to music and how it was constructed. Sometimes what the stories were about, what music they were using, what drum beats they had, what bass lines they had, what kind of feel they were going for. Continuously listening to music is, I think, is a huge aspect to then be able to gather that knowledge and to therefore compose in that kind of genre. And so I've just kind of really developed that, and I think with anything, it's the more you do it, the better you get at it.
It's interesting. So one of the things that you've raised there is the fact that you do listen, that you do hear what other people are doing. Do you find that there's an element of fashion in what other people are doing musically, in the sense they have to have this style of arrangement or this particular rhythm or whatever?
Yeah, I think there's. I think when you talk about pop music, it goes in and out of what genres are popular and fashionable.
And do you find yourself having to keep an ear on that all the time to stay current, or do you feel I've got a way of doing this and I'm going to stick to it?
Nowadays, I think that I've felt as if I've kind of got my own original way of expressing my music and my creativity. But in the past, when I was in younger days, when I released stuff in the 90s, I was very influenced by what was happening in the time, and I wanted to write music that was of that time. So whether it was like in the 90s at the time, it was like, there was a lot of hip hop going on, the development of hip hop, the development of house music. And in those sorts of areas too, though I was listening to that, I really wanted to be cutting edge with those sorts of genres. But in answering that question as well, the other flip side of that is that soul music and ballads and classical music and all those sorts of things, they never go out of fashion. For me, I think that if you write a good song, you can then use production to make it into any kind of genre you want to, as long as the essence of the song and the story and the chord structure and everything else is solid. I think that's the most important thing when it comes to composing.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point, because if anyone really reviews your whole back catalogue, as it were, they can see that, yes, the styles may have changed since then, but you're right, it's the quality that stands out and keeps those songs strong, whereas perhaps if you'd sacrificed everything just for fashion, they might have had a short-term burst of success, but then not lasted. And so perhaps the durability of your work is a sign that really you've focused on the quality side of it rather than just being concerned with fashion.
Yeah, thanks for that, Paul.
Now, everyone in the arts talks about influences on them, and you've mentioned things like your parents and the environment and so on. Do you find that as you get older, your musical influences are changing, or do you have different musical perspectives?
I think it's a hard question to answer, because I've been exposed to so much music throughout my whole life that I'm probably influenced by all of it. From classical right through to heavy metal, from hip hop to house to all sorts of things, and I absorb all of that music all the time, and then it comes out in what I write. So I have many influences.
But do you find, because you're in a very rare position in the sense that you must listen to so much more music, and as you said, of a wider variety than anyone else, do you find you get to the point where it's almost saturation, where you've listened to so much, there's nothing new, there's nothing that creates a spark anymore, or do you always tend to find something that excites you?
For me, music, there's always something beautiful about how somebody may put a lyric together with a beautiful chord that is put in a totally different type of rhythm than I might not do, or other people might not do, and I like that originality, and I think that there's always room for that, and I still love music with a passion, and I still love composing with a passion too. So I think that, I hope that will never leave me.
And what about the cultural influences in particular? How would you define them as a component in your compositions?
Waiata like Kia Tu Mahia and He Konei Te Wao Mua, the central cultural thread in those particular waiata is te reo Māori, and I think that's a significant cultural influence in composing those songs. Ka hinga te rako ka a. I made a very conscious decision that when I co-wrote those songs with my mum, that we would use te reo Māori to express the lyrical story of those songs, and also to incorporate that conceptual language within the waiata.
So the language is obviously much richer in things like metaphor and meaning, and there's a whole lineage of what particular words mean and where they come from and so on. But do you find also just the sound of the language, the fact that it's rich in vowels and so on, makes it slightly different to sing and therefore affects the way you compose for it?
Yes, it does. It does. It's interesting because you do have to, as a composer, you have to, with my mum, who was a fluent speaker, we would both sit down and I would talk to her about the concept of the story that I wanted to write for the waiata, and then she would come back with some of the te reo Māori that she thought would conceptually work well with what I was wanting to write. And the way that she spoke it and the way that she enunciated it.
A lot of people have said that being part of a culture isn't just, in a sense, an act of identity, it's an act of exploration, that you're always exploring, discovering more about whichever culture you belong to, if you make that effort. Presumably that's happening to you. Do you think that also has an effect on your songwriting, the fact that as you discover more about the culture and appreciate more about it, it reflects back on your compositions?
Yes, definitely. I've been asked this question a few times about what Māori cultural influences I've learned and have had and how that affects my composing and writing. And for me, I was disconnected from my Māori culture when I was younger, and it wasn't until I was about 15 that I made a conscious decision to want to go back to my marae and meet my whānau and see my marae and be on the whenua and learn my language as well. And having those experiences since I was 15 has contributed to me thinking about how I want to express that musically, which is where He Konei Te Wā Mua came out of, and it means bring the past, the present, for the future. And in learning about my tūpuna and wairua and my marae and my tūranga waiwai, really gave me a very strong sense of who I was as a Māori woman, and that song is an expression of that journey for me. And the more I learn about it, and the more reo I learn, and the more I have a better understanding of wairua and Māori that informs my composition, it comes out. The other side, I think, also for me, is that there are tikanga practices that I use when I collaborate with other people in the creative process of composing. So Māori practices, like if I was going to collaborate with somebody, is that whole kanohi ki te kanohi, you know, face to face, we talk, we discuss, we give each other respect to be able to talk about the creative process of the song, what parts they play, what parts how we work together. That's an important role for me. The things have been manaakitanga, so making sure that when we collaborate together that we have that whole respect and we take care of each other, and that whole understanding of aroha between us, and sharing that. I mean, I definitely have that, obviously, with my mum. But also I try and take those tikanga practices with me when I collaborate with other people. That's part of who I am as being Māori, and I think that that's important in my compositional practices.
And that's obviously had some effect on, firstly, the way you work with other people, but also the type of music that you produce, presumably, because you're drawing people in a specific way and they're able to contribute accordingly.
Yes, I mean, for an example, when I co-wrote Kia Tu Mahia with Mum, the chorus is Kia Tu Mahia, which means to be free, conceptually. And I really wanted to have the feel of what they call Waiata Tera and that whole choral singing in the chorus, so, you know, to strengthen the chorus and to strengthen the message in the chorus of that song. And so in order to do that, I needed to work collaboratively with a kapaka ropu. So I engaged with Te Waka Huia and worked kanui ki te kanui with both Bub and Pemia Wehi to establish that relationship and for them to understand what the kaupapa of the song was, and for us to share that creative expression of this particular song. And fortunately for me, they liked the song and agreed to be part of it, and it was a beautiful experience.
There's an old whakatauki which says something to the effect that once you've worked with someone, they'll always be a part of you. Do you find that's the case, that when someone's contributed to a composition that you've brought into being, that forever afterwards they're part of that relationship?
I absolutely agree with that. For me, I mean, I wrote Kia Tu Mahia back in the 90s, and I'm still talking about it now, and I'm still talking about my relationships that I had with Te Waka Huia, and they're special. They will always be in my heart, and I feel very fortunate that they wanted to contribute to my song.
And of course, one of the great aspects of recorded music is that collaboration has captured that moment in time. It's almost put in a sealed form, and it's there
absolutely
forever.
Absolutely. So they both are in the audio recording of that particular song, but also they're in the video of it as well. So yes, they will always be there historically.
And that leads on really to the issue of identity. And I know in the 1930s, New Zealand writers and then even composers like Douglas Lilburn were really consciously seeking to create a New Zealand style of literature and a New Zealand sound of music. And it was something they were very explicit about. They said, we want to do this. We don't want to be tied to England forever or have that inheritance dominate us. We want something that is specifically New Zealand. Now, there's no question that you fit into that lineage, if you like. You are part of creating something musically that has a distinct New Zealand sound. One of the problems, of course, is nailing it down, saying these are the ingredients that make it New Zealand, because it's almost a sense that you lose the magic once you try to define it. But do you consciously go out of your way for that New Zealand sound, or is it something that comes from you, or is it a bit of both?
When you asked me this question, I took some time to think about that. And to me, when they talk about national identity or a New Zealand sound per se, a part of me was like, well, being Māori is I'm indigenous to this. Being Māori, I'm indigenous to Aotearoa. Therefore, in terms of my identity or my expression of national culture is through being Māori, and I'm indigenous to this land, and therefore we have been expressing ourselves since the dawn of time in this country. So I don't think being Māori, I necessarily have to redefine that.
Well, it's not so much your identity, but the sound of the music that stops it. I mean, apart from perhaps the language, what would be something that you would say makes it different, say, from Australian popular music or American popular music?
First is the language.
Yeah.
That is the definite distinction that you can draw. I think also the lyrical content, so the stories define us differently from, say, an Australian story or an American story or an English story. Those would be the two defining things, I would say, that you could look at a song and go and be able to listen to it and think, oh, that comes from New Zealand.
And do you think the audiences generally, say, over the last 30 or 40 years, have become more accepting of that? There was a stage at one point where there's very little local music played on the radio, and there was almost a contempt for it, that it can't be as good as what happens overseas. But do you think that attitude has changed now?
I think the attitude's changed towards New Zealand music in general. I don't think the attitude's changed that much in terms of music that's in Te Reo Māori, apart from the fact that Māori music has more of a avenue to be heard through, you know, Māori television and Māori radio and things like that. But in terms of commercial stations and television, I still think that there is a definite need and drive for them to accept Māori language in a contemporary pop form and being played on their stations and being seen on television. There's still that fight to have that. There's still not enough of it.
And it's interesting because the fight of New Zealand popular music generally is to be accepted, and maybe, as you say, that's the next barrier to be broken, is the language one, that people begin to accept something that isn't in English as being part of our popular culture.
It has changed slightly. I mean, people like Hinu Wahi Mohi singing the national anthem in Te Reo Māori only with the World Cup, Rugby World Cup, was a defining moment for the use of waiata and Māori language being changing the landscape of how New Zealanders from then onwards sing the national anthem in front of the Rugby World Cup and things like that. So now we now have it bilingually, whereas in prior to Hinui doing that, we didn't. So that's a defining moment in terms of change. I think that there's people like Ngoi Pewhairangi who wrote things like E Pōr and Pōia, who have shown that there are avenues for songs to be written completely in Te Reo Māori that can still be popular on contemporary channels, you know, radio stations. I mean, both those songs went to number one.
And you've mentioned that your decision to use Te Reo has been based on artistic preferences and cultural preferences, but based on what you've just said, do you think there's also an element of it's a political act in a way, that it's about advancing the language through music, of trying to find channels that can spread the language? Is that an element in your decision making?
Absolutely. When I wrote, when Mum and I co-wrote Kia Tū Mahi and Hei Konei Te Wā O Mua, it was a definite conscious decision for me to have Te Reo Māori in a contemporary pop format in order for it to go on to mainstream, hopefully to getting it onto mainstream for as many people to hear the language in that format. And we have people like Moana Maniapoto and Hinu Wahi Mohi and Emma Paki and all of those amazing Māori women composers out there who make a conscious decision to use the popular contemporary format of music as a vehicle to highlight, to express their culture through Te Reo Māori.
Okay. If you had to chart the evolution of your music, if you had to look back at it and see how it's developed and evolved over the last three decades or so, what would you say would be the main changes that you could identify along the way?
Well, I think you brought it up earlier. I think for me, when I write now, I'm far more confident in who I am. I'm more confident in my identity. I'm more confident in my musical ability and who I am as a Māori woman. So I feel like my songs are more honest than they were in the past.
Can't understand how to go forward or go
I'm able to be more vulnerable emotionally when I write lyrically than I ever used to be. I don't doesn't bother me so much what other people think. I'm more in touch with who I am, so I write, not that I don't write from the heart, but I write more, I think I write more honestly now. And musically, I'm not so concerned with what is fashionable and not fashionable. Whatever comes, I don't feel like I have to. I don't feel like I have to necessarily make my music for a specific genre anymore.
And how do you find the reaction of people listening to it now? Because you're right, in a way you are a bit more exposed, but there's that sense that there's so much more depth in what you're doing, especially compared with what else you can listen to. What's the reaction of people to that?
The reaction of people to that is they feel far more connected to the music and to me. I think that's what it is. I think when you're being really honest and vulnerable, I think you touch people more. I think when they can see that a part of themselves in you, or hear a part of themselves in the lyric, in the story or in the music, then you're building relationships and they're connecting with the music or the wider of the music. You are there,
far in the back, in the dark. Is there a risk though, if we're looking at areas like studio production, that vulnerability or that rawness or the freshness of expression somehow gets lost if there's an emphasis on overproduction or the stresses on making something sound as slick as possible? Is there a risk that you lose that dynamism in it?
Yes, I think there can be.
And how do you manage that balance? Because the production quality obviously on your works is very high, but how do you manage to maintain that freshness in it?
Well, for me, it starts when I compose. So when I compose music, I hear it all. So I don't just hear the melody of a song or just the lyrics. I'll hear everything else in my brain. So I'll hear what beat I want, I'll hear bass line, I'll hear guitar, I'll hear the kind of feel of the guitar that I want it to be. I'll hear melodies, I'll hear backing vocals. So I hear it all. So I already have a sense an idea of how I want it to be produced. And that's what I try and do when I go into a studio, or I work with musicians, or I program, is to use that technology in those productions to help get this music out of my head. So I don't lose the quality, I don't lose the rawness of it, because it's already in there.
Well, it's very interesting, because some songwriters have the melody and the chord progression, and then they leave it to someone else to build up a song from that. You're saying from the very start, you've got a very clear conception of the entire arrangement, the mix of instruments, the mix of vocals and so on, and it's just a case of getting it done in practice.
And saying that too, I do have songs where it's just guitar and vocal, but I hear it as guitar and vocal. Whereas in others, like Kia Tu Maia, He Kone Te Wāmua, any of my, I suppose, stuff on my album, I've heard it conceptually, musically, how I wanted it to be. With it be more of an upbeat reggae stuff, or whether I want it to be really dance orientated, or all that sort of stuff. And even now, I suppose the difference, but what happens now as a composer rather than an artist, if I separate those two things, is that I hear a lot of music that I know, and songs that I have going on that I know isn't for me as well now.
And why would that be?
I don't know why that is, I just do. Like, I've written a couple of, a few country songs, and I know that I'm not going to be the one singing that. I've written hip-hop, I've written some really full-on rap beats and things like that. I know that I'm not ever going to be a rapper, I don't ever want to be a rapper, I don't want to be a country artist, but I have the... But as a composer, I can write for those genres, and I hear them. Left, right, and centre, enter, tender. Slip it all up and let it rip, money
maker. Throw it all up and watch it fall while I sink. Smoking on that coin, catch yourself. That's interesting, because it leads on to this issue of collaboration, and I know we've touched on it already, but because you've got so much of the conception of the song pre-formulated almost, How do you find the collaboration process? If someone says to you, no, we need to perhaps remove the backing vocals from this area here, or we need to add another rhythm guitar or something here, how do you deal with that sort of suggestion if you've already got quite a clear idea of how you want the song to sound?
As time has gone by, what I've noticed is that when the more I collaborate with people, I suppose the more I take my ego out of it a little bit as well, and allow the process of being able to hear what other people have to offer is a good thing. And sometimes what other people have to say works really well, and I go, oh gosh, I didn't think about that, because I don't have everything sorted out in my mind when it comes to musically. And sometimes it doesn't, and I think it just comes to a point where you go, well, actually at this point I'm not prepared to move on. And other times it's like, oh great, yeah, that works, actually that works that look much better.
But do you find now that because you've been doing this for so long and your taste has become so refined that it's less likely that someone's going to come up with a surprise in terms of how they suggest something be arranged, that you've got so much material in your head to sift through in terms of styles and so on that you can really pinpoint what you want? Or do you still get surprises when someone comes along with a suggestion that you go, well, I didn't think of that, but it actually works well?
Like, I've worked with people like a writer called Jason Bloom, who's a very well-known songwriter in Nashville, and I was writing country stuff, and because I'm new in that genre, he had a few things to offer to change a few lyrical ideas around. And I really appreciate it, and I wouldn't have heard, and I wouldn't have been able to have thought of that myself, so I was happy with that.
Meet you there like every other day, but this time I know I won't let you go without making myself vulnerable, so I'll say.
In terms of rap, I'm always surprised with rap because I can do the beats and stuff, but I'm not a rapper. So when I work with rappers and they come up with their amazing performance of their lyrics and how they put their stories together through rap, I'm always surprised because I'm in awe of it, because I can't do it. I would never think about that. I may think about conceptually what a story is, but I've never been able to rap.
Like I just started a bar fight in a nightclub. Erupt like an atomic bomb and cut your lights out. Disrupt the PC on my feet, it's gonna rise now. Yes, that's her behaviour.
I think now, having had a history of music, in fact, allows me to open up more to other people's ideas. Because I feel safe in who I am as an artist and in music. But then, once again, it's about quality of who's suggesting what, you know.
Okay. I've noticed in a lot of your works there's a real sense of energy, and I don't mean necessarily that it's fast or loud or anything like that, but there's a real sense of energy that comes through in the singing in particular. Do you find if you're around other quality singers that they sort of spark you a bit, they raise you up an extra level? Or
absolutely.
You do.
Absolutely, yeah. Just being in their company, I want to be the best I can be. I want to be the best singer I can be as well. So yeah, it does raise the bar. It does, you know, when you're surrounded by strong people. I think that's the same with composing as well. If you're surrounded by really good composers, or you want to write better, you want to delve into what it is that you're writing about, you want to edit things, you want to change things around, you want it to be the best song you can be, and that can be, you can be influenced by the people around you.
Now, you've explained how culture not only plays an increasingly important role in your compositions, but it's almost as though it begins to define the music in some way. Can you explain what that involves? How is it the culture is not just an attachment that you've put on to tick a box, but it begins to define what the music is?
For me, being Māori is a spiritual journey as well, and I've always thought of as my ability to be able to hear music and and be in touch with being able to hear things is my connection to what I call wairua, you know. And I think that is the essence of who I am as a Māori woman, and how I get my inspiration. I think it comes from wairua, and I can think of the modi of the song, my spiritual beliefs, and that emanates always throughout my music, and that's part of the energy, what you call the energy of the song. I think that's always an important, that is the one of the most important parts of my composition journey.
So as you immerse yourself deeper in the culture, do you see a direction for yourself musically that's beginning to shape what you do and the direction you head?
I think it always has. I think wairua and spirit has always been a part of who I am since I was very young. That's how I've always heard music. I've always had that connection, and I don't think that really changes. All it means is that in the future, I hope to be able to still hear music, I hope to be able to still compose music, I hope to still be able to collaborate with other people from that spiritual and wairua place first and foremost.
Great. Well, Marie, that's been fascinating. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Paul.